tut, etut.
Tut, etut.
That same.
That same.
Me. To me.
To me.
Vijanihi.
Vijanihi.
Please explain.
Please explain.
Yata.
Yata.
So that.
So that.
Aham.
Aham.
I. Manda.
Manda.
Slow.
Slow.
Dihi.
Dihi.
Whose intelligence?
Whose intelligence?
Hare.
Hare.
O my Lord.
O my Lord.
Sukham.
Sukham.
Easily.
Easily.
Buddhyeya.
Buddhyeya.
May understand.
May understand.
Durbodha.
Durbodha.
Very difficult to understand.
Very difficult to understand.
Yosha.
Yosha.
A woman.
A woman.
Bhavat anugrahat.
Bhavat anugrahat.
By your grace.
By your grace.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear son Kapila, after all, I am a woman. It is very difficult for me to understand the absolute truth because my intelligence is not very great. But if you will kindly explain it to me, even though I am not very intelligent, I can understand it and thereby feel transcendental happiness. Purport. Knowledge of the absolute truth is not very easily understood by ordinary, less intelligent men. But if the spiritual master is kind enough to the disciple, however unintelligent the disciple may be, then by the divine grace of the spiritual master, everything is revealed. Vishwanath Chakravarti therefore says, Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado. By the mercy of the spiritual master, the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, bhagavat prasada, is revealed. Devahuti requested her great son to be merciful towards her because she was a less intelligent woman and also his mother. By the grace of Kapiladeva, it was quite possible for her to understand the absolute truth, even though the subject matter is very difficult for ordinary persons, especially women. Hare Krishna. So, it's not easy for us to understand the transcendental reality. We're limited by our very conditioned state. We're living in material bodies. We can only do what our senses and our minds permit us to do. That is the nature of material existence. There's always restrictions. Just like a person in prison. His punishment is that he's not free to go where he wants. He's a captive of the prison. We're captives in the prison of illusion, of Maya. Although we have maybe some appearance of freedom, within this realm, the freedom is illusory, and the main thing is we can't get out. We can't get out of this material world. Liberation is very difficult to achieve. And what's the key to liberation? Transcendental knowledge. If you know the Supreme, then you can establish a connection with the Supreme. And if that connection is soundly founded, especially when it develops into love of God, when it becomes personal, then that can deliver you. Certainly love of God gives liberation automatically without any separate endeavor. So it is considered in Vedanta philosophy, it's understood that the sadhana, the practice that must be, the discipline that must be accepted in order to get liberation, is cultivation of spiritual knowledge. And this, the proper subject matter of spiritual knowledge is the absolute truth. Thus, at the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra, Vyasadeva writes, Atato Brahmagigyasa. So, he's beginning his textbook on the subject of Brahma Sutra, of the absolute truth. And he announces, now it is time that we should turn our inquiries, our interest, towards the question of what is the absolute truth. That is the whole topic of Vedanta philosophy. It's the topic of the Upanishads, of the philosophical portion of the Vedas. But Upanishads and Vedanta, the Vedanta is the commentary on the Upanishads by Vyasadeva. It's very difficult for ordinary people to understand. Big philosophers, people who are trained up in these difficult techniques of mental exercise and analysis, philosophical analysis, speculation, meditation. There are people who are trained up in this, but the average person doesn't have the capacity to understand theoretically the Supreme. Kundi Devi is saying this here. Another great woman devotee, lady devotee, Kunti Devi, similarly said in her prayer to Krishna, Tata Paramahamsanam Bhaktanam Amalatmanam Bhakti Yoga Vidanartam Patam Pashye Mahistriyaha. You have appeared especially for the Paramahamsas, the great liberated souls, for your pure devotees, whose hearts are pure. You've appeared in this world to give them your the gift of devotion to you. How then can ordinary people, especially like us women, how can we hope to even to get any glimpse of you? How is it that I'm seeing you in front of me? How is it that you kindly accepted me as your family member and you have a personal relationship with me? How is that? So Kunti Devi is also wondering, although Krishna should belong to those who are gyanis, actually, he's giving himself to those, not those necessarily who are very wise, but to those who are devoted, who are simple-hearted, who are humble. Krishna says in the Gita to Arjuna, Anye tvaiva majanam to Shudvan yebhyo upasate tepi chatitaranthyeva mityum shruti parayana. Krishna was talking about the gyanis who worship him by the sacrifice of knowledge, by meditation, by speculation, by pondering, by deeply meditating. And then he says there are others who don't in this way cultivate systematically and deeply theoretical philosophical knowledge. They're not capable of doing it. But they also worship me by having heard about me from those who are wise. Simple people, simply by hearing from pure devotees, also become very seriously interested in serving Krishna. Tepi chati taram keva mrityum. And they also are able to transcend the bonds of birth and death. They become liberated. So how can you say that these simple people are uneducated, therefore they're not high-class devotees? Okay, they're wearing tilak, they're chanting Hare Krishna, but they have no knowledge. But Krishna says, they also get liberation, whether they have something you can measure as knowledge or not. They must have something, they must have the essential knowledge. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavan mampapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. It's considered very rare when a great learned person, a gyani, realizes after many years of thinking about it, finally decides, oh yes, Krishna is everything. Samahatma sudurlabha, it's a very rare great soul. But those simple people, women, uneducated people, they simply hear from pure devotees, and without critically analyzing it, they simply accept. Oh yes, Krishna is very God, wonderful, and he's God. And they become devotees. They don't have to take hundreds of many lifetimes of speculation and pondering. They hear and they accept. With a good, faithful heart, simplicity, honesty, humility, they simply accept authority. Shrutvan yebhyaha. They hear from the right sources because they're honest and simple, therefore Krishna guides them to be able to hear from the right people, from the pure devotees. And they become saved. So Kunti, Devahuti, she's not unqualified the way she thinks she is. She's speaking like this and she's thinking like that. But actually she's the mother of God. And she practiced yoga for several lifetimes to become the mother of God. So she's an adept yogi and a great gyani, actually. But she's thinking humbly. She's thinking, I don't deserve it, but here I have the opportunity. You're my son. You're sitting here at leisure. You're willing to give me instruction? Please, give me those instructions. Tadetam me vijanihi. Please enlighten me so that I can easily understand what otherwise is impossible for someone like me to understand. We should not doubt. We may be fairly correct in our estimation of our own disqualifications. But don't underestimate the potency of devotional service. Krishna can make himself understood somehow by his mystic potency, even though we think we'll never understand Krishna. We'll never become fit to serve Krishna. We may think like that. And that's good to have that humility. But don't underestimate the potency of Krishna's mercy. That he can reveal himself anyway. He can give himself to us anyway. Despite all the disqualifications that we see in ourselves. Krishna forgives us for them. And he transcends them. He's able to overcome all of our shortcomings. And give himself to his devotees. The same Kunti Deva warned that not only is Krishna giving himself to the simple-hearted people, but those who are not simple, who are proud of their material accomplishments, they may lose the chance to have Krishna, to have a relationship with Krishna. Jamaishwarya Shruta Shribir Edamana Madakuman Naivar Hatyabidatum Vaitwama Kinchanagocharam. The person whose pride is inflated, who's becoming arrogant because of his good birth, his power, influence over other people, because of his opulences, his wealth, his beauty, his education. That pride that he is indulging in is the most serious obstacle to making any real advancement in spiritual life. And such people cannot sincerely call out to Krishna, cannot chant his names and actually feel helpless, which is required. We have to chant Hare Krishna not just rote, not just going through the motions of muttering, somehow getting out of our mouth these syllables, but we have to chant with helpless, eagerness. Like Prabhupada described it, like a child crying out for its mother. It has to be sincere and deeply from the heart, and then the real effect is there. So, it's better to be a simple person. Although, taking birth as a woman has great encumbrances in being in a woman's body. Automatically, at least in the traditional society, you're not allowed to take a powerful role. You have to be in the background. In the West, they're trying to ignore that natural condition that women are usually not the leaders out in the open. Women stay at home, women play subordinate roles. So if you're born a woman, you have there's restrictions on you. You don't have the freedom that a young man, Prabhupada explained. A young man, 16 years old, he can travel around the world freely. But a young woman the same age, she cannot do it. Because men will take advantage of her. So there's this natural restriction. A woman has to be protected. She cannot take an independent position. Or should not. So there's, disadvantage to being born a woman. It's difficult. It's not in my pocket. It must be in here. Don't drop it fast. But there's great advantage to be simple-hearted. Whether it takes being born as a woman, to be able to feel simple and think simple, or whether you can do it in a male body, in either case, simplicity and honesty and humility make it a lot easier to take seriously the Krishna consciousness. If we find that we're not simple, that our hearts are crooked, we should do something about it. We should work on it. That should be our main business at hand, to straighten out our hearts and become simple. Devahuti is quite simple and straightforward. She's not trying to cover over her deficiencies. She's honest about them. She's actually underscoring them. And, she's highlighting them. Look at me. I'm just a woman, she's saying. I'm not very intelligent. This is the way to approach Krishna, or to approach Krishna's representative. A disciple should approach the spiritual master, not advertising himself. Here's my certificates, my upadhis. Here are my accomplishments. That's not how you approach a spiritual master. That may be how you approach a material employer with your certificates in hand, your grades and everything else. No, just the opposite. One should go to the spiritual master and present himself as a complete fool. And that doesn't mean to act foolish, but not to show off your qualifications. The material qualifications are no qualification for spiritual life anyway. So Kunti, rather here I'm saying, Devahuti knows the right way. Just like you want to get a job, you should study how to undergo an interview, how to make a resume. There's art, how to get a job. Go about it the right way. Same thing, you want to get the spiritual job. You have to know how to approach a spiritual master. Tadvidhi pranipate, there's a protocol. Tadvidhi pranipate na pariprashnena sevaya. Approach humbly, submissively, that's pranipata. Bowing down symbolizes that you're ready to take a subordinate role as a student and recognize that the teacher knows more than you. Nowadays, that's not assumed in the modern world. It used to be. Students used to bow down to their teachers because to show, panipata, to show that you're the superior and I'm ready to receive knowledge from you. But now the modern idea is question authority. And it doesn't mean pariprashna, ask submissive questions, but to doubt their authority and ask probing, doubtful questions. That's the modern concept of approaching a teacher. It's just the opposite of the actual spiritual thing. It used to be in India, students had real respect for their teachers. They would actually bow down and not just go through the motions. Nowadays, nobody can reach down to the feet. Best they can grab your knees. I see devotees coming into the temple sometimes and grabbing Prabhupada's knees on the altar as if, you know, some material teacher. I mean, that's not how to bow down to Prabhupada, just grope at his knees. Bow down. Add him five ungas on the floor. That's proper respect. Not just grabbing the knees. And it's not just a matter of the externalities. One must trust the divine grace of the spiritual master. This is what Prabhupada talks about in the purport. If the spiritual master is kind enough to the disciple, however intelligent the disciple may be, then by the divine grace of the spiritual master, everything is revealed. So, Vishnu Chakravarti talks about this. The Prabhupada quotes Yasya Prashada. So earlier in that, in the very first shloka of that stotra, Gurvashtakam, Samsara Dhavana Lila Loka, the world is like a burning forest fire, a place of torment, of constant destruction, like a forest on fire. And the guru, the representative of Krishna, is like a rain cloud passing over that burning conflagration in the forest. How can you put out a forest fire? You can call out all the fire brigades from all the neighboring cities. But if it's the whole forest, hundreds of thousands of acres on fire, all the firemen, you know, in Uttar Pradesh cannot put the fire out. You know, or California, they can call out all the fire departments in California, and it's not enough to put out the fire. But if the rain comes, if the rain clouds come and pour their water on the fire, that's it, it's finished. So the mercy of the Vaishnava Guru, pure Vaishnava Guru, is like a rain cloud coming down on the forest fire of material existence. Nothing else can put out this fire, but the mercy of the pure Vaishnavas can. So that's the unconditional mercy of the Vaishnava. He's not discriminating. He's nothing, he's made of mercy. That's what he's about. He would like to save everybody, if he could. But he's a representative of Krishna and of the Sampradaya. He's not an independent agent. And therefore, he has to actually withhold his full mercy until the disciple becomes faithful. He's a representative. So as a representative of the Sampradaya, he has to assure that the disciple is faithful to the Sampradaya before he showers his total mercy on that disciple. He's not free to give his mercy to the faithless. He can extend himself as far as possible and try to help them become faithful. But Krishna's complete mercy cannot be given away to those who are faithless. The representatives of Krishna are not free to do that. They're under obligation to see that the disciple is faithful first. But when the disciple shows that he's trustworthy, trusting and trustworthy, then the spiritual master is more than glad to give the gift of Krishna Prema. So the thing that we require to do is simply learn how to trust Krishna and convince Krishna that he can trust us. That can be done by small things. You don't have to do some huge service to show off how competent and how brilliant you are. You don't need to become famous in order to impress Krishna. You can do simple, humble service that nobody else notices, but Krishna will notice it, and your spiritual master will notice it. And by doing any service faithfully and in a trustworthy way, you're proving to Krishna that he can trust you, that you'll regularly chant your rounds 16 a day, that you'll follow the four regulative principles, that you'll stay in the association of Vaishnavas and not become faithless, that you won't deviate. Even if you're not doing any big, noticeable service, Krishna notices. He sees that you're trustworthy. He sees that you trust him. Then he's very happy to give his full mercy. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasadam. Satisfy Krishna's representative, and then Krishna can't help but be satisfied. And there's no need to impress everybody else in this world. It doesn't matter what everybody else thinks. I mean, the ordinary people. We should care about the opinions of the Vaishnavas. But the materialists, we should feel compassion for them. We should feel sorry for them. We should do everything we can to help them spiritually. But we shouldn't care what they think. We shouldn't conform to ordinary public opinion, because it means nothing. It means nothing. All that matters is the opinion of Krishna and his devotees. All right, so I'll stop. Okay. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Srila Prabhupada, he took inspiration from, I think, a postman, right? What, sannyas?
A postman?
Who was it? Who?
Yeah.
What's
the story?
I don't recollect the exact pastime of Prabhupada.
Yeah?
Somebody asked Prabhupada, then, why don't you take sannyas?
Mm-hmm.
Who was it, I forgot? So he got...
Well...
It was not a devotee, exactly.
Well, there were... Prabhupada, he was encouraged by a few of his godbrothers.
Yeah.
His guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, appeared to him in dreams several times and told him to take sannyas. I don't know about this postman.
There was one person who...
Yes?
And Prabhupada understood that this instruction is coming through the spiritual... from the spiritual master.
Okay, I haven't heard that, but okay.
It's in the Leelamrit.
Okay, yes.
So my question to you was, we may not have the determination that Srila Prabhupada had at all, but sometimes when a person from outside comments that he may comment that you claim to be a devotee, but you speak very harshly.
Yes.
Shouldn't we take this seriously?
Yeah, you can find gold even in a dirty place. Or other words, if you see gold, even in a garbage dump, a place where you normally wouldn't pick up anything, if you see a gold ring sitting in the garbage dump, go ahead and pick it up. You know, it's worth a lot of money. So even if a useless person somehow good advice comes out of his mouth, you should accept it. You can accept advice even from a fool, even from an enemy, if it's clear that that advice is actually coming from Super Soul or from some, or from representative of Super Soul.
But we cannot speculate whether it's coming from the Super Soul.
Well, we can. Then, in that case, when you're not, you can't be sure if this is actually good advice because it's not coming from a good source. Then you take counsel from other devotees, from devotees whose opinion you can trust. Now, I heard such and such from this person. The person's not a real authority, but it sounds right. So you ask the trustworthy devotees, the ones you can trust, what their opinion about the same thing is. Take counsel.
And if the advice somehow comes...
That's what Prabhupada did.
Oh, yeah. And if the advice somehow comes in confirmation with the scriptures.
Yes.
Like the person says that you don't display any humility at all and you keep on, and if we find that this is a quality encouraged, so can we take it to be in
the
case?
I think so. We can take it as good advice. In general, if someone criticizes us and it's not obviously wrong criticism, then we should be very grateful. Yeah. And when people flatter us, we should be very scared. We should be thankful when people find fault in us. Because it's very hard to find fault in yourself. Someone can help you find that fault, then you should be thankful. If you can be honest enough to do that, but that would be the best thing. To be grateful that people are helping you discover your faults. Now, people pay psychiatrists huge amounts of money to just listen to them, so that they might say something that reveals the deep secrets of their hearts. And pay $60 an hour to a psychiatrist. He just sits there, does nothing, says nothing. You just talk. Just to discover what your real problems are, your real troubles, your real faults. So if someone, without paying him $60 an hour, can tell you what's wrong with you, then you'd be grateful. You saved so much money. No?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
What is the difference between ego and self-confidence?
And self?
Confidence.
Oh, okay. Well, you're talking about ego not as just the principle of self-identification, but of pride and arrogance. So what you're saying, what's the difference between arrogant pride and self-confidence? Well, healthy self-confidence should just be with the idea that I feel confident because I'm Krishna's servant and he'll protect me. Not that I'm confident of my own abilities. I'm confident because I'm rich. Yeah, but you can lose all your money easily. I'm confident because I'm wise. Well, you sound like a fool to me talking like that. You may think you're wise. I'm confident because of this or because of that. If you're confident because of your own assets, then that's arrogance. But if you're simply confident that, I'm working for Krishna, even though I'm a fool and I'm very weak, I can stand up against all the opponents in the world because Krishna is supporting me. That kind of confidence is healthy. The Pandavas were confident because Krishna was on their side, not because of their own capacity. And that was their strength, and that was the assurance of their victory. Jayastu Panduputranam Yesham Pokshe Janardhanaha. Victory has to go to the Pandavas because Krishna is on their side. Now, so to be confident in that way is very good. But to be confident because of what you think you are, rich, powerful, intelligent, beautiful, that's arrogance and it's foolish and is detrimental to any spiritual advancement. Okay?
When you just said you should take advice from the Vaishnavas.
Yes.
And It is good to take advice from them, and if they say something, you should listen to them. But many times we see that even in the Vaishnava there are people with different grades of, you know, realizations and
yes.
thoughts. So sometimes it may happen that it is usually said that if your counselor is more happy with you and he understands what your position is than what other person is saying,
yes.
or even if he is a Vaishnava is saying, it should not be hurting us, or it should not be affecting our decisions and things like this.
Yes.
So it should not be affecting our decisions, should not be affecting our thoughts. Even if if a counselor is happy with us, because there may be a counselor over us, he may be guiding us in our life.
Yes.
So he finds it that, okay, you've got a valid reason. So any other Vaishnava says anything, it should not be a matter of consideration.
Well, yeah. I tried to avoid making it sound like you should go to any and all of the Vaishnavas for counsel. I tried to say it just now that you should go to devotees who you can trust. And it's partly your own, you know, choice who you can trust. But you should, you know, use the normal standard for deciding who to trust. Don't trust somebody because he flatters you. I like so-and-so, he's good. Because he always works for my sense gratification. And I don't like so-and-so, this other person, because he obstructs my sense gratification. If you're judging people as good and bad on that criterion, then you're very foolish. But if you can be intelligent and find people to trust who will speak the truth to you, whether it flatters you or not, then that's the person to take advice from. The person who you can trust to speak honestly, that's a real friend, not the friend that flatters you. So find those Vaishnavas who can tell you the straight truth. You know? And try to take their counsel. Not just anybody. Yes, Vaishnavas are of different degrees of trustworthiness. So not that you should trust listen to everybody and take everybody's opinion equally. But you should find someone whose opinion you can take very seriously. We all need that, you know, to be able to ask for advice from somebody. But we have to be very discriminating who we take our advice from. But certainly, basic principle is, you're going to get better advice from the Vaishnavas than from the non-Vaishnavas. Okay. Yes.
Sometimes
when
you increase honesty in ourselves, sometimes it happens like in our life, something happens. It's very difficult to tell others. At that time, what we should do?
Okay. Sometimes you have to lie. Sometimes, you know, in order to survive or to save one, to help someone else survive, to avert catastrophe, sometimes you just have to lie. You know, speaking the truth is not the highest principle. Maybe staying alive is a higher principle. Yeah. sometimes you have to lie, and other times you have to be tactful. Sometimes you just have to conceal the truth, or just not blurt it out. A lot of times, you know, people are not ready to hear what they really should hear, but they're not ready for it yet. Spiritual masters dealing with their disciples have to be like that all the time. They can see very often right through the hearts of their disciples, but their disciples are not ready to hear all these things about themselves. So they have to dish it out gradually. You know, they have to be tactful about how they explain to the disciples about the disciples' faults. You know, they have to not flatter them, but, you know, be tactful with them. Sometimes flatter. So even the guru who's supposed to be completely transparent and truthful, he has to be tactful too about how he reveals the truth. You know, just like a doctor is trying to save a patient, he's doing a very radical treatment. Suppose you're using chemotherapy to destroy a cancer. You can't overdo it, or you kill the patient. It has to be done gradually. You know, you have to give maybe 3 or 4 doses of this, you know, radiation or chemotherapy over a course of time. Like that, our dosage of hard truth has to be given to us sometimes in small, gradual doses. Otherwise it will kill us, or, you know, just shatter our self-confidence. So that's not dishonesty, to be tactful with someone. you know, to give him doses of the truth as he can handle them. That's just the truth in the mode of goodness. Krishna explains as priyam satya hitam, speaking truth in the mode of goodness is to speak the truth, but also in such a way that it's priya and hitam, that it's beneficial and also pleasant. It shouldn't be shocking, it shouldn't be, you know, something that discourages the person who you tell the truth to. The truth should be encouraging, and it should result in actually doing some good for the person. So you have to know how to tell the truth, which means sometimes being tactful.
What are the contents of like Vedas, Nishads and Puranas and Vedas, Sutras, and how we can like differentiate?
In 2 minutes? The contents of the Vedas. The Vedas actually contain all knowledge, but it's not easily understood. The Vedas are very concise and sometimes mysterious in the way they express themselves. It seems to us. But actually it's because it's for a special audience. The original Vedas are not really meant for a human audience. The Vedas were originally studied and chanted among the demigods. For the great demigods and sages, they were the original audience of the Vedas. Ordinary human beings have a hard time understanding the original Vedas. Even in previous ages, what does Vipra Kali Yuga? Vidyananda Maharaj gave a good example. If the temple president needs a Sunday feast cooked, and he has an inexperienced cook, he has to explain to him what halava is and how to make it. He has to tell him the whole recipe and explain how to do it properly, and then next thing, how to make sweet rice. You know, he can spend 2 hours explaining how to make the Sunday feast. But if he has an experienced cook, he just tells him, we need a feast, please make halava and sweet rice, this and that. And in 10 seconds, all the instructions are given. So the Vedas are speaking like that. You know, what for us would take a lifetime of instruction, and a few words, those who can understand are told. The Vedas are speaking in that kind of language. Make a feast, sweet rice, halava, pakoras, period. We can't understand that language. So ordinary people need further explanation. The Vedas themselves provide philosophical explanation of all that in the Upanishads. Upanishads are addressed to human beings, whereas the other Vedas are really addressed to the demigods. They mostly consist of prayers that are offered to Indra and other demigods. The original part of the Vedas, what is called the Samhitas, or the hymns of the Vedas. Then we have the Upanishads. There's other parts there, but I'll skip over it. But the Upanishads explain things philosophically so that at least intelligent human beings, the most intelligent human beings, can understand it. But then a lot of human beings aren't intelligent enough to understand the Upanishads. They're not philosophers. So for ordinary people, the Vedas explain themselves in the form of the Puranas and the epic histories like Mahabharata and Ramayana. Same philosophy, same original knowledge of the Vedas, but in simple language, in story form, instead of dry philosophy, in histories of kings and interesting people, same knowledge is given in Mahabharata, in the Puranas, and Srimad Bhagavatam is also a Purana. That's basically, I mean, you know, that's about 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could take a whole, you know, 2-semester course explaining what the Vedas are contained and what the important parts of the Vedas are. Okay. Hare Krishna. Should we stop here? Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Great Gopi Parandanku Ki.
Good shaman. Sir, have you traveled in
the world?
I was in Calcutta, Jamshedpur, Patna.
On the world?
Sir, I have not been come last time because I was captured in the world. Next 2 weeks I'm in Hyderabad.
Hyderabad?
So I sent the money to Acharya to the taxi.
Yeah,
we
take
a long
time.
Because I'm listening to the speak to you after that.
Okay,
how was your trip to South India?
It was, we got work done. Because our main aim is to, you know, to be able to continue working even though it's the middle of the winter. Yeah, and we were able to, you know, take care of everybody. Mahaprabhu Chaitanya joined us and helped us organize. Well, he's going to Mayapur now and he'll be going to America for a few months after that. So we'll be together. I mean, I'm going to Mayapur also in 10 days. I'll be with him in Mayapur, but then he'll be going off to America after this one.
We'll be there for Gopurima?
Not till Gopurima. Because I can't stay away from Gopurima 3 months, so I'm going for 3 weeks. Almost 4 weeks. I'll be there from the 23rd, maybe to the 16th of March.
I'm planning to go on the 18th.
Okay.
Stay there for the 15th.
Okay.
Your invitation.
Cool. But you get more vacation than that during the year.
Well, you know, this last 2 years have been very tough. We have our own business,
yes.
So I haven't not been able to take so much time on that. We usually take like 6-7 days. Yes. During Kartik, a week off then, and then a week off. And then maybe 10 days to go to America, spend on my school for now. What's good counseling to give to devotees who are, you know, who've been chanting and who are, you know, necessary for something? To devotees who are, you know, chanting and they want to, you know, get initiated, but they're not sure like who to get initiated from or how to go about, like.
Yes. Well, devotees should shop around. And maybe not, first of all, by hearing. You can hear from various devotees. Recordings are available, and many devotees' classes again here in person. But then okay, sometimes you have the problem of the devotee who just is doubting Thomas and can't, you know, decide that he trusts anybody. Then it's difficult.
Yes.
So you can take your time, but, you know, maybe a few years, but there's a limit. Prabhupada said if someone doesn't take initiation after 7 years, then he's a Shudra. Actually, you're talking about Brahminical initiation, second initiation. Within 7 years you should take it, otherwise. Because that goes back to the Vedic system, that a boy who after a certain age hasn't gotten his Upanayana, that means he's considered disqualified. Brahmacharya, he's, you know, outcast. So the extension of that is that, you know, someone who wants to seriously take Krishna consciousness, he should get initiation at least within 7 years. And he can't, maybe he's got to not be so picky, you know. It's not like, oh, you know, if I make the wrong choice, then I won't get the full benefit of the welcome service. There are any number of suitable devotees there who could be your spiritual master. Just pick one of them.
whoever you feel compatible with. It's not like you have to, shop around for the rest of your life, and never end up choosing anybody.
Yeah. Because I met a few young devotees at the Calcutta temple.
Yes.
And I guess in ISKCON now there's a little bit of people become more skeptical.
Okay.
So
what kind of doubts are they?
Just,
what makes them hesitant?
Like, so many, spiritual masters are not acting spiritual masters anymore.
Yes.
So where to put the trust in? Should we put, one of them, at least, he had decided that, he was just going to put his trust in Prabhupada. And
yes.
And that not in anybody else. And so there's a lot of, I spent a few hours with him. So I said, you pray to Prabhupada to help you find a suitable spiritual master.
Yeah. The thing is, we really trust Prabhupada for what he is. Prabhupada is someone who can empower people to also become powerful devotees. Yeah. Prabhupada, he's the guru at whose feet other masters sit. He can make masters. And if you don't trust that, then you trust very fully in Prabhupada, that he can empower his disciples. And his disciples' disciples.
Yeah.
What we should look for is not Superman or someone who's got, we shouldn't look just for charisma or just for someone who sings nicely or,
yes.
Or some material quality. Or even someone who's got, anyway, whatever. We should look for someone who's got Prabhupada's blessing. And we should look for the clue that so-and-so is empowered by Prabhupada. That's what we should be looking for.
What would be a symptom of someone who's empowered?
He's doing something useful for Prabhupada's mission. No. He can't. Krishna Shakti Bina Nahi Dharva Vartan. I was at the Yoga Peak once, and some brahmachari there, young brahmachari, said, "Oh, you people over in this con, you're just materialists. This is all an external show." And I just answered him that, you can say that, but such a, huge, spiritual organization all over the world spreading Christian consciousness can't happen unless it's done by a great empowered soul. And I quoted that verse, Krishna Shakti Bina Nahi Tarabhavartan, and he couldn't answer. He had accepted right out of Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yes.
The words of Mahaprabhu. Unless someone, you can't spread Krishna consciousness all over the world unless you've got Krishna's Shakti. And so you see that. You see who's actually helping fulfill Prabhupada's mission. Not that single-handedly, but doing something in some capacity. Substantial. To help spread Krishna consciousness around the world. That's a sign of empowerment. He's making people more Krishna conscious, not less. That's important thing to look for. Someone who's actually, what we want is Prabhupada. But you're going to have to find Prabhupada, in his representatives also.
Yeah.
If you come too late to get your initiation directly from Prabhupada, you're going to have to take it from somebody else. Try to take it from someone who's got some of Prabhupada's Shakti. Or maybe expressing it more philosophically, look for someone who's faithful to Prabhupada. If you're worried that you may get a guru who might have a deviation later on. But it's less likely if the person is actually faithful to Prabhupada. Anything can happen in the material world, probably use it. But you got better chances when you got someone who's obviously very strong in his faith to Prabhupada.
That would be demonstrated by the way he lives, the way he presents philosophy.
Yeah. Lives like a devotee, he behaves like a devotee, he does the things that devotees do, and he's accomplishing something for the mission of Prabhupada. But if you see, he's behaving not quite the way the devotee would, and not saying things that a devotee shouldn't be saying, then you can suspect. Anyway, we can be careful shoppers, but eventually we have to go, make our purchase eventually. Yeah. Within a few years, within 7 years, you have to choose somebody.